You asked for more, and you got it. Underrated Rivalries, Episode 2, coming your way on an all-new episode of the Wrestling Guys Podcast. That starts right now. All right, coming to you from the Forgotten Borough of Staten Island, New York, this is the Wrestling Guys Podcast. This is the fans' perspective on all things in the world of WWE and the world of professional wrestling. We are your hosts. I'm Eric, otherwise known as Fizz. With me, as always, my tag team partner, Chris Never Miss, aka Bull Power. Underrated Rivalries coming, episode 2. One of my favorite things that we're doing right now. But we know we don't start until we get the nice, socially distant clink. I give you the clink to seal the deal. Restrictions are being lifted in New York now, so maybe we can stop doing these virtual clinks after a while. That'd be nice.
Yeah, everything is opening up. I finally went back to the movies a couple weeks ago for the first time in over a year.
What did you see?
Quiet Place Part 2.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. And I will be headed back to the movies when Black Widow comes out.
That's when I think will be my first time going back.
Yeah. And yeah, it's good to be, you know, I am very much a homebody, but it's good to be able to get out and do some things, not have to wear a mask all the time, and kind of just get back to normal.
So I've been vaccinated since March, middle of March. And the other day I went into Target with my son. It was the first time I ever walked into Target without a mask on. So like, you know how like you get that like opposite effect? So like when you were wearing masks and you go into a store, you notice how many people like had it down around their face or just didn't have one on it completely. Yeah. So now I walk into Target now, fully vaccinated, restrictions are lifted, and I felt like everybody in the store had a mask on but me. Yeah. And I'm looking around and I'm like, oh geez, should I just put one on just to, you know, it felt weird.
It's kind of funny.
I had two in my back pocket too, just in case.
Right. It's kind of funny because, I mean, I'm vaccinated also, but I feel like now that these restrictions are starting to be lifted, I see more people wearing the mask.
I wear mine now just because my son's not old enough to get the vaccine. So I wear it for him because he's like, is the virus over? And I'm like, no, not yet. But then we walked in the other day and I'm like, everybody has a mask on but me. Am I doing something wrong here? I was like, I mean, I walked around the store, you know, kept distance anyway, you know, just to be safe on the safe side anyway. But yeah, I just noticed everybody. And I'm like, why is everyone wearing it now, you sons of bitches? So like everybody knows something I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, whatever.
It's human behavior is a strange and funny thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you get a car that's a certain color or a certain model, and then you see it everywhere on the road that you've never seen it before until you bought the fucking car. It I don't know. It's just, I think it's one of those like effects in my head that's going on. But all right, I want to get into this underrated rivalry. We started with part one was Bret Hart versus Diesel. We have a great one on deck. I don't want to get to it yet. I want to ask you a quick question.
Shoot.
Did you get a chance to watch the latest In Your House, NXT TakeOver In Your House Part 2, I guess you would call it?
I did.
What did you think? Immediate impressions of the show?
I mean, as always, NXT puts on a good show. I definitely enjoyed the entire event. And I am always a fan of multi-man matches, and this Fatal 5-Way that they had is really just every... I mean, if you rank the top five guys in NXT, that's who was in the match.
Right.
And I think it was pretty cool. I see why they set up that match, because they did it to say, well, you know, because obviously Karrion Kross won, so it was like, well, who's next? And then we kind of find out that, you know, who's next, or at least maybe, as long as he's cleared to wrestle. So I think it's just continually, I mean, we've talked about it over and over again, and I just think NXT continues to prove why they are the superior brand, and the one brand that is worth watching week to week. And I love that they're bringing back these old theme events, you know, In Your House and Great American Bash is next. You know, I'm digging it.
It makes it very unique. You know, these like nostalgic throwbacks, but they embrace it fully, like having Todd Pettengill on there, having Michael Hayes as Doc Hendricks, all this like different stuff. Even Beth Phoenix dressed up like an old Doc Hendricks tuxedo from one of the old In Your House.
It's cool.
Embraces it, which I love. Johnny Gargano was like Shawn Michaels, but I don't know if you noticed backstage, the whole The Way, which was dressed up like The Click. So Johnny Gargano was Shawn Michaels. Austin Theory was Diesel. Mm-hmm. Indy Hartwell was Razor Ramon. And Candice LeRae was 1-2-3 Kid. That was awesome. Yeah. I thought that was great. Even down to their outfits, I thought that was great. I loved how they embraced it and they embraced that stuff. The winner take all six man tag, like, you don't see that a lot. Tag team champions embracing the tag team division, embracing your secondary titles, which is like, you know, it was cool. Good match. I thought every match was very, very well done. I thought Ember Moon made Raquel Gonzalez look incredibly good. I loved the main event. Problem with the main event, I get it because it's a fatal five-way, so it's bound to happen. There are way too many false finishes in every single match. Way too many. And I go back to, I was just listening to 83 Weeks, and they had Scott Hall on there as the first guest they ever had. And he was saying how when he was wrestling with Sean, they were going through their feud and going up and down on the house shows and on the loops. Pat Patterson told him, "You guys are doing great, but you're missing something." And then he's like, "You guys should have a false finish.
Right.
One. Right. And he goes, "You know, I think it's a lost art form. There's way too many." He's like, "You know, you want to hear my opinion, but there's way too many false finishes in every match." And I couldn't agree more with Scott Hall.
It's definitely true. And you know, all the guys in that match they all come from the independent circuit, right? So they all have that background that we see on the independent circuit, which is all the false finishes, all the super kicks, all the non-selling moves. It's you don't see. Jim Cornette said it probably best. You don't see somebody reacting to something anymore. It's just you see somebody making sure that they are set up for the spot. Yeah, I'm kind of paraphrasing what he said, and he said it when he was talking about the Dynamite Kid Dark Side of the Ring episode. And he said that the matches between Dynamite Kid and Tiger Mask, which are, you know, the groundwork for everything that we see today with smaller wrestlers.
Yeah,
when they did all their high spots, it looked like it was organic. It looked like it was just one fluid motion. Whereas now you can tell when somebody's just waiting for the next spot to happen.
Yeah, getting up and waiting.
Right.
Like, and, you know, waiting for that tope, you know? Yeah.
Right. And, you know, definitely I think the no-selling is probably the most hurtful thing in the wrestling business today when you watch a match and it's just like that. I think that's one thing that I've always disliked about the Road Warriors, which is, you know, the Road Warriors are probably the greatest tag team of all time, but they never sold the damn thing. And I know that that's, you know, somebody can say, well, that fits their character, but it kind of gets a little boring when, you know, every single match the guys are trying to beat the shit out of them. It's just not working. You know, you want to see these guys in peril and you want to see that they are making it look real, not look like it's choreographed.
Right. But you're also not going to get like the Ricky Morton sell job from Hulk or Animal. Right.
I mean,
you know, it does have to fit. Yeah, I do what you're saying. I see what you're saying for sure. But like in a fatal five-way match, I could see the false finishes happening because, you know, especially with the, you know, I'm going to pin you. Somebody pulls me out of the ring because they want to save the pin. That makes perfect sense, you know. But when you get kicked in the face and then kicked in the back of the head and then you duck another kick and get him in your finisher when you just got kicked in the face twice, kicked in the head twice.
Yeah.
The suspension of disbelief, like, listen, I'm all for it. And I get that wrestling is fake. It's not the it's still real to me damn it thing. You know, the suspension of disbelief goes down significantly because now it's like if this was any other sport that you're trying to make it legitimate, right? We make movies, right? Even in movies, you get hit in the fucking head, you're out. You're knocked out or you're dead, you know, one of the two. You know, you have to sell it. You're not going to duck. You got kicked in the back of the head. You got kicked in the face. I'm talking about Johnny Gargano here. And he ducks the last shot to get him in the Gargano escape. How are you holding that finisher? You're like, it would have been great if Gargano ducked and tries to get the Gargano escape, and while he's holding him, he's like, I'm trying to do like a dazed motion here, but you get what I'm saying? Like, almost like he got kicked in the face. He can't really hold it because he's dazed, but they don't do that. It's just, you kicked me, okay, on to the next move, you know? And it's a lot of that. And then, you know, like I said, like coming into the rescue, in tag matches, coming into the rescue as a near fall, perfectly fine with. But when you hit a devastating move, and it's 1-2, near fall, Okay, great. Maybe the first once or twice. But then it's like, okay, this is the end here. One, two. Okay, I'm like, dude, what the fuck? Come on now. Now it's like, either end the match or stop this shit. You know, like, I'm not trying to shit on the match. I thought the match was good. I thought it was very well done. I think AEW is guilty of it. I think NXT is very guilty of it also. Like, they got to stop. It's way too many near falls that people know now, like, nah, this isn't the end.
Yeah, and even the main roster, you know, the Raw and SmackDown and their main pay-per-views, we see it on there too. You know, all the false finishes. And John Cena, I feel like every single one of his matches, you can guarantee that he's going to have to hit three or four FU or attitude adjustments.
What's the value of a finisher anymore?
Exactly. You know, like you can bet that you're going to see it three times before the guy goes down. And it's just when you can watch a match from as soon as the bell rings and you can say, I know how they're going to do it. I think that's a problem.
It is. Yeah. And I think that's why the fan base is starting to wane. They're starting to say it's predictable. A finisher to me should be a finisher. You hit it once and it's over. And the match should play on the fact that if you hit it, it's over. Like, not, I'm going to hit it twice. Now, maybe in a match, in a high WrestleMania main event, Austin Rock, I hit the stunner and you kicked out because it's for the world title. Okay. Completely understand. On a Monday Night Raw in a main event, you should not be kicking out of a finisher once or even twice at all. I'm sorry. Right. No. And the reason why I bring this up, there's a reason. One, I wanted to see what you thought of NXT overall, of course. But and also, before I even get any further, welcome back Samoa Joe. I'm glad they brought him back as the enforcer for William Regal. Apparently, Triple H was pissed off that he was released in the first place. So good for him that he's back.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
With NXT, you know, and you know what? Keep him there. He deserves to whatever role he's in right now. And the reason why I bring this up is this. We talked about, so our last underrated rivalry was, our first one was Bret Hart and Diesel. And we watched their match from Survivor Series 95, and we pointed out that there was one false finish in that whole match. And it wasn't until the very, very, very end. And then, you know, we got into our ending sequence. And it's a lost art form, right? And we're going to catch one to, you know, we're going to catch our next underrated rivalry as we move on here is going to be one that you have brought up, Sting versus Vader. And this is WCW, so now, ooh, we're treading all the water here. But when you think about these two guys, right, and you want to talk about realism and hard hitting, they're stiff as shit.
Yeah, we're about to watch it.
And you're talking about, like, Vader, who is notoriously known for being stiff, but Sting had to elevate that game to be with him. And there's that, and as shitty at times that 90s WCW, like early 90s, I'm talking about, like 90 to like 94, 95, early 96, as bad as it was, these two guys were like killing themselves with these matches, you know. And okay, you're gonna ask us, like, how was this rivalry underrated? When you think of Sting, the immediate rival that comes to mind is not, well, at least I want to say majority, is not Vader. It's usually Ric Flair, usually Hulk Hogan, NWO, right? You know, mm-hmm. Because of later on. You know, and with Vader, you talk about his Cactus Jack stuff, you know, ripping off of the ear, or his failed WCW run, or the fact that Ron Simmons beat him for the, you know, to be the first black world champion. And this era here of them kind of gets glossed over. And if you ask me, I think Sting is Vader's best rival in WCW.
I would agree. I mean, Sting was the longest rival as far as program that he had. Cactus Jack ranks up there too, because they had great matches together. The reason why I thought of this, and even if you look it up and kind of research it a little bit, if you just type in to Google underrated wrestling rivalry, Sting versus Vader does appear.
Right.
And I think the reason is because Vader, pretty much at the time where he went to the WWF, his career started going downhill. And people blame that on Shawn Michaels, who allegedly, but there are people within the business who talked about it. People like Bruce Pritchard, even Jim Cornette, said that Shawn didn't like that he was a stiff worker. And when they had their main event match at SummerSlam and Vader blew a couple of spots, that was pretty much the end of his push. His run in WWF was very mediocre. Like he never got that title run. He was a high mid card, sometimes main eventer. You know, he was put into programs with people like The Undertaker and, you know, Shawn Michaels, mainly to lose to make the other guy look better. He was never it was never so he could look good. I feel like that's what most fans remember today of Vader. And we forget about his monstrous run in WCW, where he was running roughshod through everybody. He was, you know, beating the shit out of people. And his best rival there was Sting. So that's why, to me, this is underrated, because of, you know, everything that you just said. You know, and when we think of Sting, we don't think of Sting versus Vader. We think of Sting versus Flair or Sting versus Hogan. Never Sting versus Vader, and that's why we're going to do it today.
I'll tell you this, for me anyway, and you're right, that WWE run, as failed as it was, there was a lot of things. One, he tore up his shoulder before he left. He never actually fully healed and came back way too early.
That's true, yeah.
The match with Michaels at SummerSlam was devastating to him, because the stars were in place for him to go over on Michaels and win the title. Yeah. That's why... instead of Sid going over Survivor Series, it was supposed to be Vader.
Yeah.
That's why the following months In Your House was called In Your House, It's Time. It was already planned out, because Vader was supposed to win that belt. And because of the shit that happened in SummerSlam, it never came to be. And then he went, just never really materialized into anything significant that he was in WCW or in Japan. For me personally, and I'm jumping way, way ahead, I'm just going to say it, Vader is my favorite big man of all time. Hands down. He's my number one. I absolutely... loved Vader, because every time Vader on WCW television was on, he looked terrifying.
Yeah.
He had the mask on, which wasn't really a mask. It looked like he was just a muzzle trying to keep him at bay. When he came out with the whole Mastodon headpiece thing, like he looked like you would never want to cross him on the street. Like, you would see him coming down the street and you would cross the street to stay away from him. And he had the matches to back it up. You know, I absolutely, like, I loved Vader. I loved when he was going to come to WWE. Unfortunately, it didn't pan out the way it should have. But looking at this feud, and I saw you here, you wrote, so it's a 2-year span, essentially, right? 92 to 94 and 7 matches. I did not know that they had a WCW Worldwide match in 92, which is pretty crazy.
The WCW used to use Worldwide and Saturday Night to really showcase some big-time matches.
That's unbelievable. And I would never know. I was aware of their pay-per-view matches. Never knew that they had one. And Worldwide was that the Sunday afternoon or the Saturday morning show?
Sunday.
Was it? Yeah. All right. So, I mean, who the hell's watching it on a Sunday afternoon or whatever? Yeah. But, you know, whatever.
I did.
You know? Yeah, I would watch the Saturday night one. I would make sure. I was around Sunday, definitely. But this is, I mean, you want to talk about star-crossed. I mean, it seems like their paths kind of came, I mean, you're talking where Vader started out, right? I mean, he was trained by, and get this guy Brad Rangins, his name comes up so many times.
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar and WCW, like, you know, the New Japan deals and stuff like that. And he trained Vader as well. So this is like, and then this goes back to those Minnesota territories. You know, how many people came out of Minnesota?
Rick Cruz, a lot of stars, yeah.
Road Warriors, you know, your Flairs, all those guys, right? And also him getting his start in the AWA. AWA is very, very significant at this juncture, right? When you think about all the top-level guys that came through the AWA, eventually into Crockett, Carolinas, you know, WWF in New York, and he was no different. So Leon White, as his real name, The guy looks like Vader. His first name is Leon. That's anyway. Regardless. Starts in the AWA as under the name Baby Bull, and that's why I called you Bull Power or whatever before. And then later changed it to Bull Power, which is pretty crazy. So he's there briefly. You're talking about a 2-year run too, about 85 to 87, and then where he really comes to prominence is he goes to Europe first. He's working for Otto Vons in Germany and then goes to New Japan. And we were just looking this up before we went on. And I had said to you, I was like, didn't Vader, I was like, wasn't somebody else supposed to be the Vader gimmick beforehand? And we looked it up and I'm thinking, I was like, was it Ultimate Warrior? And I thought maybe I was just talking crap because I just saw Darkseid and all this other stuff. And we looked it up and it turns out Ultimate Warrior, confirmed by Austin, was offered the big Van Vader gimmick first, and he turned it down, which, thank you.
Yeah, it's, you know, sometimes when you play with alternate, I guess, roles, if you will, for lack of a better word, and you can use movies as an example, when you think about people who were offered other parts and all the different actors that could have been in that role, and you try to picture it, you can't do it, right? It's hard to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's very hard to imagine the Ultimate Warrior as Vader.
Knowing what we know about the Warrior now, that big Van Vader game probably would have died very fast.
Very, very quickly, yeah.
But it was crazy because he started out in All Japan with Baba, and then Giant Baba traded his contract to New Japan, and yep. They had this gimmick ready to go, calling him Big Van Vader. He wore this big metal, looks like a Mastodon almost, headpiece, where yep. He would take it off, walk down the stage, and then he would point at it, and like steam would rise out. It was a whole thing. It was cool as shit, right? I mean, and then we have the famous, do you hear what I said right there? The famous 1987 Inoki match.
Yep, and anybody who goes over on Antonio Inoki is going to be a major star. And this was the first time that he and Inoki went one-on-one. And it was very early in his New Japan run. And he actually defeated him, and it caused a riot from the crowd.
Right,
the crowd rioted.
So Antonio Inoki had just defeated Riki Choshu in a match.
Right.
Vader comes out immediately after, challenges Inoki to a match, which he accepts. So now, to put some context there, right? So Inoki's very worn down. He's very tired. And Vader basically squashes him.
Yep.
And beats him. And after that happened, you know, the crowd is so – because Inoki was like the Hulk Hogan of Japan, the thing, at that time.
Absolutely.
Right? And they rioted. So New Japan got banned from Sumo Hall, which was their home arena, until 1989, believe it or not.
Yep.
And then they didn't come back until, like, I think February of that year. But imagine that, right? That's a debut. You come out, you beat their biggest top star, cause a riot in the arena, and then you're out. Holy shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's significant, for sure. Yeah. And I don't know if you know this, but the Brody Lee, Cody Rhodes initial AEW match where Brody Lee won the TNT title – the inspiration for that match, the way it was so one-sided, was Vader and Inoki. That was their inspiration for that. I know I heard Cody Rhodes in an interview actually stated that he wanted his version of Inoki and Vader, which is crazy if you think about that. So now, moving on to that, right? So at this point, Vader's in New Japan. He's working part-time. Then he comes to 1990, comes to WCW, but he wasn't there full-time. He was like on a part-time deal kind of, where he was like splitting his time between Japan and WCW at the time.
Yep, and I think even when he was making appearances in WCW in 1990, he was the IWGP champion, and he was the first ever non-Japanese wrestler to hold that title.
The first Gaijin.
The first Gaijin, yeah.
And he beat Hashimoto, right?
Chinya Hashimoto? It was a tournament.
It was an eight-man tournament. He beat Hashimoto in the finals at the Tokyo Dome. Which is pretty crazy. So he had, you know, another huge star, Shinya Hashimoto, right?
Absolutely.
Beats him. He's the first Gaijin to IWGP champion. And then he's splitting his time between New Japan and WCW. And then he suffers some type of leg injury.
He suffered a leg injury while he was a tag team with Bam Bam Bigelow. Now imagine that tag team.
So first
we don't have to imagine it because they existed, but only in Japan.
And they were IWGP Tag Team Champions. How about that?
Yep.
Big, Bad, and Dangerous. That was their name. That's such an early 90s, late 80s name, right? I mean, Bam Bam Bigelow, too, another great big man. Imagine that tag team in any other promotion. How did they not think of that? That's amazing, dude. But he injured his leg in a match with the Great Muta, if memory serves me correctly. I'm actually looking it up now here.
Yeah, the thing was Muta, and that's what led to them dropping the belts to the Steiner brothers.
Right.
And then New Japan would use him, like his time there would start to wind down because of leg injury, and that's when he was able to go full-time around 92 in WCW.
Right. And here's another trivia. He was only champion for a month when he won the initial championship. He lost it to this Russian wrestler named Salman Hashimikov. But I guess he was like a legitimate...
Sambo wrestler.
Then they were trying to like do like that mix of MMA at the time. Yep. And did it. He dropped it back to Choshu, and then Vader beat Choshu again. He was a two-time champ. I think he ends up being a three-time IWGP champ when it's all said and done.
I believe so, yeah.
And then did we talk about 1990 losing an eye in a match with Stan Hansen?
No, the famous match he had with Hansen where his eye was popped out of his socket.
So he broke Vader's nose with his bull rope, right, that he carried to the ring as he walked to the ring. First of all, Stan Hansen is legitimately almost blind and, like, he can't see. Right, he
wears glasses
without that. So how did he let him wrestle? I guess nobody wants to talk shit to Stan Hansen. That's great. Listen, great Hall of Famer, whatever. Okay, he removes it, like, he literally stuck his thumb in his eye. The eye pops out of his socket. Okay, he removes his mask and is holding his eye in the socket with his hand, and still wrestling somehow. And they had a crazy contest and stuff like that. But
crazy stuff.
Talk about like. That's some hardcore shit right there. I mean,
yeah,
that's pretty crazy. So, I mean, Vader in a nutshell here. And by 1992, he is, I think, in WCW full time at this point. He's going, you know, and then we will shift to the man they call Sting at this time, which is crazy, too, because just watching the Ultimate Warrior stuff on A&E and on Dark Side, talking about it's just amazing to me how they were. So think about. Jim Hellwig, Warrior, offers the Vader gimmick, and yet somewhere down the line, him and Sting were working out in the gym together, and they became wrestlers and became a tag team.
But like, Sting look at that. And the look Ultimate at, Warrior tag team.
I mean, that's crazy, right? So yeah, like known as the Freedom Fighters, but then they went to the Universal Wrestling Federation or UWF, whatever, as the Blade Runner, which it's actually a cool name.
Yeah.
But then when you see them with the makeup on, it's like, oh, guys.
Yeah, you don't really kind of know what it. Supposed to be
right. What are they? Blade Runner Rock and Blade Runner. Am I missing? What was Blade Runner?
I think it was Blade Runner Flash, and then he changed it to Sting.
Oh wow, that's crazy, right? Imagine that as a tag team. But then you know, if you've seen or familiar with the A&E documentary, it shows you how Warrior didn't want to make a shot. Sting ends up doing it. Warrior took it kind of as like, "What the hell are you doing?" And they kind of went their separate ways. Warrior would go on to
the Dingo Texas, Warrior, right? WCCW.
Right, yeah, world class. That's it. Totally escaped me just now. And then Sting would go to the UWF. UWF gets bought up by WCW. One of those contracts is Sting coming over to WCW. He becomes a singles wrestler. He's muscular. He has the blonde hair. He's a cute guy. Ladies love him. People are cheering off the, you know, cheering. And they're like, oh, we got something here, right? What can we do with this guy? Where can we develop this guy? You know, Rhodes at the time has the book. He wants to showcase this guy. Still a little green, but they start putting him in top-level feuds almost immediately.
Yeah. Sting is probably him and Booker T are my two favorite WCW wrestlers. I would put them both in my top five of all time. Sting is just one of those wrestlers that you can't ignore, right? And even, you know, back then he wasn't the only guy that was doing face paint, but it was still a unique look. You know, he had that blonde flat top. He had the face paint. He was big, muscular guy. He had all the different colors. And his intensity set him on, you know, apart from everybody else. And he was just a guy that I think was destined to be what he eventually became, which is a legend.
Right.
And Dusty Rhodes was the one who was like, you know, this guy needs to be showcased immediately.
I mean, this guy gets put into top level feud with Flair, Four Horsemen. He becomes part of the Four Horsemen. He's feuded with Koloff and Luger. Mm-hmm. He's friend teaming up with Luger. He's everywhere. Wins the world title, wins the U.S. title, multiple times. So immediately just gets on the scene and immediately thrust into the spotlight. And rightfully so. Was he ready for the spotlight? I don't know. But he answered the call. He lived up to the challenge in this case. I mean, Sting then, at this time, well, WCW is in cahoots or in bed with the NWA. He has that first, hour-long draw with Ric Flair, kind of establishing him as like, this guy can go. Ric Flair loved working with him. His first world title would come in 1990 at the Great American Bash. I remember that so vividly because of what he wore with the red, white, and blue face paint there, right? So there's Sting. And Sting at that time is taking off. And then we start this feud. And, again, had you not pointed out, I would have never known. But looking at this now, it looks like a February 1992 taping of WCW Worldwide. So I don't think you can get this anywhere. I actually looked it up after I looked at the notes. And if you get Sting's like DVD box set that they like sold when he first signed, it's apparently the match is on there from Worldwide. So if I can find it, I'll throw it on our at Wrestling Guys PC Twitter page.
Now, is that the first time? Obviously, it's the first time they went one-on-one, but it was it the first time they shared the ring? Because I know that Halloween Havoc, I think, 91 maybe Halloween Havoc, when they did that big cage match where it was the 4-on-4 or 5-on-5 tag team.
Is that the one where
Chamber of Horrors, right? Is that
where they had to kill Abdul the Butcher?
Yeah. You, in order to win, you had to put somebody in the electric chair.
Yeah, the electric chair. Yeah. Yikes. Let's see this. He was in that match. The Vader was in there. The Chamber of Horrors match.
Sting wasn't in that?
Lost. You know what? Let's look it up. I think the Steiner brothers, Cactus Jack, were in there.
Abdullah Butcher.
You're right. It's Sting, El Gigante, and the Steiner brothers against Abdullah the Butcher, the Diamond Stud, otherwise known as Scott Hall, Cactus Jack, and Big Van Vader. So that is the first time they share the ring together. Not one-on-one, but...
Right. What an interesting concept to win a match.
It's cool when you think about it, but the fact that you have to electrocute somebody and then they appear on TV a little while later, it doesn't really...
Doesn't work out, yeah.
Does fit with the whole horror movie vibe, though. I get it. Way to go. But yeah, you're right. So that's the first time they're in the ring together, not one-on-one. One-on-one is at this Worldwide taping. This is in Atlanta, obviously. But this one, in my research... It's fairly short. Sting wins by count out. But what from what I gather is that it was a slow match. It was a quick match. Vader kind of just was his usual self, dominated early. But what they pointed out was that Sting was like more resilient looking in this match. Also, the fact that like he would try to capitalize on all the little Vader's like mistakes. Every time Vader made a mistake, he jumped on it with his speed, with his agility. But then, you know, ultimately he ends up just winning by count out. And that's really their first match. I have to go back and watch this, actually, now that we've discovered it. But it also shows you how Sting brought out the best for Vader. And this is not just for Vader, too, but I think any big man benefits from a smaller, and Sting's not necessarily smaller, but a guy who could, like, bump and feed into the moves. A big man versus big man match very, very rarely pans out to something.
Yeah, they always seem to disappoint, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Whereas, like, Diesel and Mabel doesn't work out, but Diesel and Sean and Diesel and Brett is always money.
Right.
You know? And it's funny, too, because when you think about it, you know, I'm thinking about I'm showing my son Kane versus Undertaker. He wanted to see a Kane match, he wanted to see an Undertaker match. It's like, oh, they face off against each other. He tells me, but aren't they brothers? And I'm like, yeah, but look at this match. So, you know, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, they have chemistry, but they don't have chemistry in the ring.
Right.
You know, like these matches just don't. The big man versus big man doesn't. Oh, I've never. Nothing comes immediately to my head where I were like, oh man, that's one that actually was legit. You know what I mean? And I'm sure I'm probably something's escaping me here. I wrestling guys, PC, please, guys. But let's get to the first match that they have in this feud, right? And this is for after the Worldwide taping. This is still in '92 now. This is now February was the first match. Now the second match is in July. And this is for the WCW World Heavyweight title. This is that Great American Bash 92. Sting versus Vader.
So this is where the 1992, they have that. Well, I guess they had it in 91 also. Where Ric Flair left with the big gold belt. Mm-hmm. And the WCW created this new, smaller looking championship. I actually like this belt. What do you? I like the big gold belt, but I like this belt too.
I like the big gold belt more, but I like this belt too. I really do. I wish they would release it on WWE Shop, honestly, because I really do. I'm a big fan of this belt, honestly. It's legit. But wasn't this particular Great American Bash as well? Wasn't the entire pay-per-view card one big tournament except for this world title match? I want to say it was the WCW Tag Team Championships were vacant.
Yeah,
The entire pay-per-view was that tournament.
The tag tournament, yeah. Plus this match. Right.
Which is odd.
WCW did a lot of stuff like that, especially early on with their pay-per-views.
Yeah, like having the Lethal Lottery for an entire
Starcade. Yeah, Lethal Lottery, and then there was that one Starcade, Future Shock, where it was like a round-robin tournament with four guys. It was Sting, Flair, Muda, and Luger.
Yeah.
And all they did was wrestle each other in a round-robin
for points. Yeah. It was cool. You know, A for effort. Some of it doesn't work. Some of it does. But, yeah, I mean, this is another one that they say. It's a nice, it's a really just brutal back-and-forth match. It's hard-hitting, right? But it's like Vader really, of course, Vader being the stronger, the bigger, you know, really it's just dominating the match. Slow, but very, very heavy-duty offense. Sting every so often will get some momentum. He counters. He hits him with a lot of different, you know, a lot of quick moves or some bit like a big power move or something like that. And then eventually just Sting's trying to get it. He's trying to build momentum, but then ultimately Vader just gives him the business. Right.
Right.
And I don't want to say he squashes him. You know what I'm saying at that point. Right. So, but in that match, Sting would also, he would also suffer an injury.
I think Sting, not in this match. I think the other match that
was
they had.
What's the match after this?
But before this one.
Really?
So I think it was at the Worldwide match where he suffered some cracked ribs. But this match too, the Great American Bash match, Vader did win and became the WCW champion for the first time. But only reigned for 3 weeks because he re-injured his leg. And then he would be out until Halloween Havoc.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, so he would get two cracked ribs and a ruptured spleen. He would be out of action for a few months. Yeah. Leading up until this, Vader goes over. Vader's now your new champion. And then Vader goes on a fucking tear. In between that, I think, I want to say sandwiched in between this and that King of Cable. What a title. He drops the title to Ron Simmons at this point.
Yeah, so after winning the title, the Great American Bash, he re-injured his leg. And then 3 weeks later, dropped the belt to Ron Simmons. And Ron Simmons would hold the title basically up until Vader came back and was healthy to win it back.
So then you had in between their next match, you're talking about, so Vader gets hurt, he re-injures his legs, he drops it to Ron Simmons. Ron Simmons becomes your first Black World Heavyweight Champion. Sting moves on to an emerging Jake the Snake Roberts and the infamous Coal Miner's Glove match
at Halloween Havoc, yeah.
This is not the first, but this will be the start of these like mini movies that they make for significant feuds. And yeah. Listening to Eric Bischoff, he talks about this lady, Sharon Sadello, who was like in charge of making these like productions. And I remember watching Jake and Sting for that Halloween Havoc match for the Coal Miner's Glove doing like this mini movie where like they walk into a saloon and they're like challenging each other. It's like stupid shit. Yeah, it was so weird. And then, you know, that match happens. They put the glove on to hit him. I mean, I will say this, and I'm glad that NXT brought it back. Spin the wheel, make the deal is a cool-ass awesome. Concept.
Yeah.
Cool-ass concept. It's one. If it wasn't my top two things that I wanted to come over from WCW was War Games, number one, spin the wheel, make the deal, number two. And they brought both back, and I love it.
They did. And Shotzi Blackheart should host it every time.
Shotzi Blackheart could spin the wheel, make the deal any day. How you doing? Getting back to it. In between those feuds, we got it. Eventually, Vader comes back, regains the belt fairly quickly before that. But before this, we have our, again, in 92. So you're talking three matches in 1992 in a span. This is at the very, very end of 1992. You're talking almost near New Year's Eve, December 28th. So I love the title of this. The King of Cable Tournament.
Yeah, so I always wondered what this actually meant. And in, you know, preparing to do this episode, I decided obviously now's the time to do some research on what King of Cable is. And it did actually have meaning. And it was to celebrate 20 years of NWA WCW being on TBS. And it was very similar to the King of the Ring concept, where, you know, an 8-man tournament in the winter, instead of being King of the Ring, I guess you'd be the King of Cable. Sting would beat Vader in the finals and he won a trophy, and then we would never see King of Cable Tournament again. So it actually did have some meaning to it.
Right. So, you know, TBS trying to jump on there real quick. And then the Battle Bowl concept at this point, I think Sting is the inaugural Battle Bowl winner. He gets the Battle Bowl ring at this point. And then they have this Halloween Havoc match They're the final two contenders in the tournament, and this is like a 15-minute-plus match where, again, hard-hitting, back and forth. But the good thing about this match is that they pick up where they left off almost from their first two. So, like, you're seeing offensive moves that Sting pulled off successfully in the second match that he's bringing over to here because he knows he was able to hit it the first time around, which was great. Actually, like, very rare, great bit of storytelling between these matches in WCW at this point, which I think is actually pretty significant, which is awesome. That's how you you really show, like, how great it is. I remember specifically, like, he did, like, this rolling heel kick. Yeah. And he did it in the first match, but it's really the second. And then he did it here again. But again, another hard-hitting match, another, like, really just back and forth. But this time, like, the added element of, like, Sting kind of, like, anticipating Vader's moves this time around because he's seen it before. You know, so, like, he's kind of ready, but not, you know what I mean? But then Sting ends up getting the win here, becoming the king of cable, which I'm surprised he didn't walk around with, like, a TBS crown after this, or a TNT crown, or a Turner crown. But, like, he goes for the crossbody. He gets it into a power slam, which was awesome, which also beat him in the Ron Simmons match, which is another, like, little tidbit, which was awesome. And, again, that plays into Sting anticipating his moves, being a little bit smarter this time around, and then getting the win, which was cool, honestly.
Yep.
It's cool as shit, not for nothing, right? So that's a cool moment here. However, Vader would win the title back 3 days later after this, or 2 days later after this.
Yep.
In a house show, no less, right? Am I correct?
Yeah, I think so. He beat Ron Simmons and won the belt back.
Right. And then not to mention that, and I think, I don't know if we glossed over this, but Sting is the first Battle Bowl winner. I believe Vader is the second, and he eliminates Sting to win that one as well. Yeah. So, this marriage between the two. And we want to get into this infamous, very, very infamous, very good match, but lovely title as the White Castle of Fear.
Yeah. Which, like I said with the King of Cable, after doing some research, that had meaning. White Castle of Fear, based on what I could find out, nobody really knows what that was supposed to mean.
Well, the White Castle of Fear was Vader's residence.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm making it up.
I thought you were being
serious. No. So if you watch the mini movie that accompanied this this feud, right? He said, "Come to my White Castle of Fear." So it's like, oh, so Vader lives in that White Castle of Fear.
Oh, right? I get it.
Yep. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like Sting's on a helicopter in the middle of these snowy ass mountains. you can hear Vader's voice as he's going up the mountain. And he walks in. It's like they're going back and forth. Like, these mini movie things that they're doing is like, it's so weird. Like, it was, so, I don't know. Like, and I remember too, like, and this is maybe going off the rails a little bit. Fucking. the beginning of Halloween Havoc 93, where Tony Schiavone does this, like, mini movie with these kids where he's, like, scary, but he's a monster at the end. Like, it's the same thing. It's like, what the hell is going on?
WCW was very, very strange with their production videos, right? Like, WWE, we all know what they're capable of when they make videos like this. It's, like, top-of-the-line stuff. Yeah. WCW, I don't know who was in charge of doing some of these, like, vignettes and these special things, because a lot of them were just plain fucking stupid.
But not, like, even vignettes. They're like self-contained, like, 20-minute films.
Yeah, well, yeah, the ones that that you're mentioning, yeah, they were, like, films, and some were good, some weren't. But even, like, their vignettes, like, I remember, just real quick, you know, not to get sidetracked, but remember when Juventud Guerrero lost his mask to Chris Jericho? Mm-hmm. And, of course, him losing the mask, he, like, they gave him a little bit of a push. He's starting to, like, win more and more. And I remember watching, I guess, Nitro, and they said, here's a special look at Juventud Guerrero. And all it was a vignette of Juventud walking around these waterfalls. And that's all it was. And it made no fucking sense. And it's just like, who is in charge of WCW production with these things? So yeah. They definitely had a lot of inconsistencies with their production videos. It's like they would just like, I don't know, almost like how certain independent films just they don't make sense. It's just motion on a camera, like, and I guess you're supposed to understand what's going on, but you really don't.
It's supposed to be contemplative. I lost my mind. Did I lose myself? You know, it's one of those bullshit, like, you know, but you're right though, right? Like, who, like, these like elements of like, yeah, these vignettes, these like little self-contained mini movies. The only thing that's good about this is that the match backs up,
right,
whatever the fuck they were trying to do with that, you know? And that's the thing too, like, you're in a castle together and they face, I remember specifically, like, they're like in a castle, I guess, and they're on either side of a table, and then it's like Super Brawl. It's like, Super Brawl 3. And it's like, what happened to the castle? Did he make it out? Like, you know, but here they are. This pay-per-view. Okay. You know, it was very weird when they try to do stuff like that. It was just, yeah. Like, and no real explanation. What is the White Castle of Fear? No, it's a strap match. And they just put White Castle of Fear strap match attached to it, you know? So, whatever. At this time, Vader's the WCW champion. He had just got it back from Ron Simmons. And then prior to that, I think it's a WCW Saturday Night. Vader, Barry Windham is holding Sting, like, draped over the ropes. Vader's, like, whipping him with the strap. And that's what leads to this match. Now, and at this point, we're at, this is, what, match four in the whole thing here. But that wouldn't be the last one. This one, I think this one and this Starrcade match are probably the two best.
Yeah.
This one more significant, one because the movie is just, you know, Oscar winner hands down, and the match itself is very good for a gimmick. Not a huge fan of the strap match unless it's done right, and this one's actually done good.
Right. Yeah.
Slamboree 94 is their, I guess, final thing, I guess, together. But like at the time, you had Ric Flair coming back from his run in WWE. You had Rick Rude, who was the champion, but injured his back or his neck. I want to say his neck in an international tour. Had to almost pretty much retire after that.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that was pretty much it.
Yeah. And Vader was chosen as his replacement to go against Sting for what they were calling at the time the International World Title, which was the big gold belt they had separated in 93 from the NWA. They had the WCW World Title and the International Title. And at this point, I think the plan was to unify these belts. And this particular one, Sting goes over. He wins the International Title. Flair becomes the World Champion. They have a match to unify those belts to just have one world title, which, you know, obviously Ric Flair, who's Mr. WCW, ultimately wins in that unification bout. And that's essentially the end of their feud.
That'd be it, because after that, Vader would move on to feuding with Hulk Hogan. You know, because Hogan, now that he was a part of it, he came to them right around Bash at the Beach 94. Was immediately given the belt, and now he's their top guy. So, of course, Hogan needs that monster to slay, and there's no bigger monster that WCW had at the time than Vader. Yeah. And Vader would have a long program with Hogan, and then right before Vader was about to actually be turned into a babyface, Vader would leave to go to WWF. So he would leave WCW around, I think, September of 95.
So you're talking, as significant and memorable as some of these matches are, again, and think about this too. We talked about this last episode with Diesel and Bret Hart, right? Essentially a 2-year time frame, a minimal number of matches, still memorable though. Same thing with this. 5 or 6 matches or 7 matches, right?
7 matches. 7 including, matches total. Yeah, including, so pay-per-views, TV tapings, and house shows, 7 matches, and Sting overall would win the rivalry 5-2.
Right, and then you have 3 of them alone in 1992, and by 94 it's wrapped up and finished, because then, you know, in between then, again, Sting would go on to do his thing, and then Cactus Jack and Vader would start, you know, kicking off their little feud, and then they would come back together in 94. Vader's off, you know, feud with Hogan, thought he was going to turn face, yeah, he goes back to WWE, and then Sting, by 96, 97, he's full-blown Crow character feuding with the NWO, and then that's it for them.
Let's not forget, though, to further enhance their feud during 93, where Sting and Davey Boy Smith were teamed up against Vader and Sid.
And then another mini-movie. They planted a bomb on Davey Boy Smith.
Yeah, Beach Blast.
Sells fantastic. Yeah, Beach Blast before it was Bash at the Beach. Yep. Tag team match. Davey Boy and Sting against Sid Vicious and Vader, where Sid Vicious and Vader wore their ring attire to the beach. Yep. Full Speedo and mask and, you know, unitard. British Bulldog goes on the boat. And I think it's Sting's boat that gets the bomb planted. Yeah. The British Bulldog takes it and throws it. Big explosion in the water.
God,
they face each other off in the sand. again, another great mini movie. So they have in this feud, they have two really good mini movies to hang their hat on.
And also, for the cherry on top, War Games 93. Vader, Sid, and Harlem Heat versus, back when Harlem Heat was still Kane and Cole, versus Davey Boy Smith, Sting, Dustin Rhodes, and the Shockmaster.
Oh, that's right. He's going to shock the world. He's the Shockmaster.
Yep. And the most infamous debut of all time.
Yes. Pretty crazy, right? How significant is that? Greatest, most memorable debut probably ever. On top of that, they have some really big players in that match, though. Think about that. Harlem Heat.
Yeah.
British Bulldog, Sting. And it's like, wow. And if I remember, I haven't seen the match in such a long time. The match is not that bad.
It's okay. It's not one of the more memorable War Games matches.
Right. But again, to add to the feud. But at the time, if memory serves me correctly, that feud going on at the time was Bulldog and Vader.
Yeah, that was, because Bulldog had just gone there in 93. Obviously, they wanted to use him as a top guy. So they kind of switched Sting and Bulldog. And then Sting would actually feud a little bit with Sid. But they did keep Sting and Vader together because they made it like, you know, they made those tag matches and multi-man matches to keep them together too. So,
right. So, again, tied together by great, awesome mini movies / matches. But the one we're going to watch is our Super Brawl 3, White Castle of Fear. What does the White Castle of Fear mean? We don't know. We know it's a strap match. We know they go to the White Castle. We know they make it out somehow. They stood across the table and said, hey, I'll see you in the arena, and probably just left. But they were there. And that's the match we're going to watch now. I love it. Go to Peacock. And yes, the title of the pay-per-view is Super Brawl 3. But you want to go to Peacock and go to Super Brawl Season 3, Episode 1. Because they hate us. And they want to label shit like it's fucking TV. And
yeah,
it's
awful. Makes no sense.
Absolutely. Awful. I'm going to say it until they change it. I don't care what happens. It's still crap. I hate that I have to fast forward through a whole pay-per-view to find a match. I can't even do the match. Why couldn't they just port? I'm going to rant until it's over. Why couldn't they just port the network to Peacock? I don't understand it. It was already
I don't get it either.
It was already built out and it was already done. What are we doing?
It was built out perfectly. They took stuff out of the network. They changed the whole interface. It just doesn't work for me. I mean, obviously it's great, but it's also not so great.
It's not still real to me, damn it. I'll tell you that much. that's bullshit.
And if there's one mini movie you got to watch, it's definitely the Beach Blast one, because it is ridiculous.
They plant a bomb. They try to kill.
They try to kill Sting and British Bulldog.
They try to kill them before the match. He's like, Stinger! Stinger! And he grabs a bomb and he throws it in the water. That's fucking... I want to just watch that right after this. It's so great. he's like, and they're playing with like the kids in the sand and shit. Oh god. And the boat is not even on the dock. The boat is like right at the shoreline.
Yeah.
He could just in your fucking paws. Like, okay, dude. You can't make that shit up. I wonder who... I would love to meet the people that wrote and shot that. If anybody knows those people, send them our way, man. At Wrestling Guys PC. I would love to interview those people. All right. If you're up at Peacock... And you got Super Brawl Season 3, Episode 1, because there's only one episode in this season. It's very, very exclusive, very, very high-end. One episode a season. It's fantastic. You're going to go to 2 hours, 21 minutes, 49 seconds. It should take you right to where Vader is about to walk out. I loved his theme song, by the way, during this time in WCW. If you go a little bit too far ahead or too far back, you'll get a nice little... promo between Johnny B. Badd, Missy Hyatt, and a very young Eric Bischoff talking about the main event that's coming up. So you don't want to watch that because Johnny B. Badd has like a sailor outfit on or something. It's very weird. Anyway, and body glitter. Lots of body glitter. Chris, you're ready over here.
I'm ready.
I'm going to hit play in 3, 2, 1. And there it is. We got a little sound going to start. Dave Penzer is the man. Oh, so wait. White Castle of Fear, Lights Out, Leather Strap Match. That's a fucking huge title.
It is a huge title. And that's just nothing but confusion as to what this is actually supposed to be.
I literally think that they just put a bunch of words in front of Strap Match to make it seem more dangerous.
And also, this is non-sanctioned. So it's not for the title.
So here's the thing. Is AW, did they get the Lights Out gimmick from WCW then? Is that where we get this from? If it's unsanctioned, it's Lights Out. AEW does the same thing.
It definitely didn't start with AEW, as we see here.
Aha! I miss the headpiece from Vader. He has like this weird like fur robe thing going on. And there's that for the WCW world title we're talking about. Tell me that's not menacing. He's barking at the crowd. That's fucking scary as shit if you're a kid.
Vader was just like a complete badass.
I love
that you couldn't ignore when he walked into the room. He just had that presence about him.
I do like that title a great deal. And if Vader is in the WWE game, I always give it to Vader.
Which I hope he is in the new one.
I'm really hoping this 2K knocks out the park. Here's the Man Called Sting theme song. I do like the one previous to this one. The rock heavy guitar riffing one.
Yeah, I like that one too.
Wow, the pyro's really going heavy. Going heavy for the stinger. I've been stung by the stinger. Oneonta, New York. The most popular man in all of wrestling today, according to Jesse Ventura. Huge pop, though. I mean, he's not wrong in WCW terms.
He might not be wrong overall.
Oh, bigger than Hogan?
Maybe. Well, I mean, Hogan, this is 93, right? So
Hogan's popularity is starting to wane.
Yeah.
He might be right. Who has that Sting action figure? But she's worth big bucks.
You know, wrestling overall at this time was, business was not what it used
down,
to be.
Down across the board at this point.
Yeah.
Shivani and Ventura, very underrated commentary team.
I agree. I always liked Ventura, as a commentator. I always liked Tony Schiavone, mm-hmm. except I think now, listening to him in AEW, I don't think he really cares.
Oh, he's really phoning it in.
Yeah.
Him and JR. So it says, non-shanked by WCW at the bottom. Tony Schiavone, if you're not listening to the audio, just went through Sting and Vader's feud and when they started from 92 till right now, which is actually really good. Good setup by Schiavone. Crowd is booing heavily for Vader. I'm waiting for him to pull the straps on. By the way, rest in peace, Harley Race, right? One of the great ones.
Yeah, and Vader too.
Oh my God, you're absolutely right.
Vader passed away a couple of years ago, right? And Nick Patrick is still alive.
Oh, okay, great. Because if it was just Sting still alive in that ring, I'd be upset. I'm going to hit the audio, just kind of muted here for this. So now this leather strap, which we're always used to seeing, if you've never seen a strap match before, both men have one end of the strap tied around their wrist. The goal usually is to touch all four corners of the ring before your opponent does, usually by dragging your opponent around with you. In this case, is that the rule that applies for this match, or is it for just pin and submission and just beating the shit out of each other?
I want to say that it's been so long since I've seen this match. I want to say that they have to touch the corners.
Yeah, because I see them now, as usual, starts with the tug of war. Vader just tosses Sting across the ring with no problem. You know what, though? Vader is not the overweight Vader we saw in WWE here. This is the built, muscular Vader here.
And this is regarded as one of the best strap matches.
It might be the best strap match, honestly. It's debatable for sure. And of course, you have your old school, I'm sure NWA guys will tell you, like, no, something from like 70s or 80s is probably better. wasn't alive in the 70s. I do try to catch up as much as I can. But for me, look at the traps.
He's a big dude. But apparently, as menacing as he is, he was also a super nice guy.
Yeah, I heard. Total sweetheart. Also was notorious for not washing his ring gear, so I'm probably very, very smelly right now.
Yeah.
Sting used to say that when he used to wear the gloves, he wouldn't wash those gloves for weeks, and he would just kind of like paw at you with it when you're in the corner. It would just stink in your face as you're in there. That's pretty crazy.
I mean, all that sweat buildup, that would cause a staph infection.
Yeah. I mean, you know, listen, you're moving from town to town. You're really...
Yeah, I guess no it's
time.
It's tough.
There's laundry facilities by the time you get to the hotel. So a lot of these wrestlers, they say like they'll spray like Febreze on their stuff and they air it out outside their hotel window if they have or a balcony. Oof. There goes your balls. But Vader, I think, just crumbled his attire in a ball and threw it in a bag somewhere.
Now, do you prefer Crow Sting or 90s Surfer Sting?
I'm a Crow Sting guy. I do like the Surfer Sting. I did like the different face paint with the different color, but it was time for a change, and he changed at the right time. And I do like the Crow Sting has, if you think about it, has been a lot longer of a gimmick than the Surfer one ever was.
Yeah, that's true. And probably what he will go down as being mostly remembered for.
Right. I mean, that changed, you know, complete reorientation of his career, but it worked. I do like the Crow Sting because I loved, you know, one, you recognize it right away. It was like, oh, shit, he looks like the Crow. Being in the stands, coming down from the rafters with the bat at the time when he was just like a menacing dude. Like, he totally changed it. And there you go. Oh, look, pulls the strap between his legs, strapping his balls. Oh, did it again. And, oh, three times in a row. Hitting him with some fists there. A lot of spinning. Crowd is going buck wild for Sting though, man.
Yeah, and you know, as big and menacing as Vader's character was, he was not afraid to sell for people.
No, and it's kind of like, listen, I knock Brock Lesnar a lot. I'm not the biggest Brock Lesnar fan, but if he believes in you, he'll sell the shit out. You know. He'll sell everything for you. Like, he makes a lot of guys look. He made Finn Balor look really good in their Royal Rumble match. You know what I mean? Like, so if he's into the match, he'll look, you know, it's the same thing with Vader. Vader's making look Sting like $1 million here. Gets up, takes that flying clothesline in the corner, and jumped up and sold it, you know?
Yeah.
Good move there.
And now Sting up to the top, almost fell. Big splash off the top. Yeah, see, so no covers. So they definitely got to touch the corners.
Yeah. See, Nick Patrick not doing anything. Old school referee uniform there, huh?
Sting going back up top.
Another one.
Nailed it again.
And a pan of the crowd. Kind of awkward cut right there. It's splash. Here's the crowd. Got some Japanese press there.
I think in 1993, I might go as far as to say that WCW was a little bit better than WWF.
Say what?
Because they weren't as cartoonish as WWF was in 93.
They definitely weren't. It was more about the wrestling than it was about the gimmicks. They had better high-profile feuds. Cactus Jack and Vader 1993 is money. If you've never seen their Halloween Havoc match, it's probably one of my all-time favorite matches in WCW history. Sting and Vader, of course, is good here. And 93, you're having the emergence of Hart as your top title contender. You're Shawn Michaels. So, like, that newer generation of guy is now coming up in the world. Your Razors and your Diesels and stuff like that. Yeah, but then you still had your, like, stupid ass gimmicks, Abe Knuckleball Schwartz and the Goon. And like,
yeah, and 93, the WWF's most high profile feud with Yokozuna and Lex Luger.
Right. And listen, no disrespect to Yoko. Yoko was great. It's the other guy. You know, that wasn't fantastic.
Yeah, Luger didn't live up to what was expected.
Here's another.
What is this? Is Vader busted open?
No, it's the it's a welt on the back from the straps from the welt, from the whipping, I think.
It looks like blood all over his back.
Yeah, it is legitimate. It broke his back open.
Okay, so he is bleeding.
Yeah, it broke skin, I believe, for just from whipping him.
And he that's pulled good. Oh, look at that.
Corner. Ooh, body slam. Now, that's some strength right there to pick a man up like that.
Sting is deceivingly large, I think. Like, I don't think we realize how big of a guy Sting was.
You know why I don't realize this? Because when you see people in relation to people in their profession, like if you see, like, the shortest guy in an NBA court, and then you see him in real life, he's like towering over you, but it's like, you know, you're standing up there with seven footers. You know, it's like when you see a guy like Sting standing up to Vader, but then you see Sting in person, it's like, holy shit. You know, Vader's back is legitimately, it's welted up, busted open.
And I don't know if you noticed, but, you know, they're on the outside of the ring right now, and Sting was actually touching the posts, which I guess on the outside. Yeah.
So it doesn't matter where or how, as long as you do it.
I guess in this match, yeah. I've never seen that in any other strap match.
Was Patrick counting it off?
He was.
Man, yeah, Sting was. You're really selling his ass off here. Oof, look at that back.
Yeah, that looks bad.
The worst case of rug burn I've ever seen. Wow, someone drop.
Like it was nothing, too. And that's what I mean about Vader not having a problem with being generous. Like, you would think that a guy his size, that he wouldn't allow people to pick him up. But Sting does it with no problem.
Yeah, ease. It's really that, just... It's good shit.
It's that big body hit that Vader always does.
There he goes. Now he's coming back on the offensive here. All variations of the Vader bomb. Power bomb, splash in the corner.
Yeah, we talked about before about false finishes and finishers not really being as protected as they were. I don't remember anybody ever kicking out of the Vader bomb.
No. If he lost, is maybe he didn't hit it.
Right.
You know what I mean? A finisher, and I'll keep saying this till, I don't know, day we keel over. Finisher should be a finisher, right? You know what I mean? Like, it's that's it. You know, wow, Vader splash right there. Oof.
And also, there is one finisher that I know at least comes to my mind because I remember seeing it in like a countdown of the most protected finishers. No one has ever kicked out of the Razor's Edge.
Really?
Yeah, which is interesting.
But you know what, though? And I'm pretty sure, knowing, like, no. Listening to interviews with Scott Hall, that's a Scott Hall thing. Like, right. Dude, it's my finish. Why? I've heard him on another podcast saying, like, how do you feel about kicking out of finishers? I think he was talking to Colt Cabana. And he's like, pretty much, without saying it, saying that it's bullshit.
Yeah.
A finisher is a finish. You know? When does it stop being a finishing move? Look at that. Vader bomb in the corner. Always loved that. Always loved that.
And this is definitely, like, physical hard hitting.
They both look like spent already because they are. Yeah. It's a very, very physical match, putting everything out there. I'm really loving watching this old WCW here. It's really bringing me back, old school. They did have some high quality matches at this time too. I mean, I'm thinking that the Vader Cactus Jack feud is also should be on this list of underrated rivalries too. That might have to be covered one day.
Absolutely. It's definitely good to. Yeah, and I'm sure we'll do more of it, revisit these old WCW days.
This is Sting doing a good job selling the pain. And Vader has him up in the on his shoulders. See, I thought he was gonna pick him up and carry him to all four corners here. But it looks like he wants to do like a ultimate Samoan drop.
And he does.
Whoa, it pulled it off. Oof. That looked like it hurt, like legit.
It's Scott Steiner's move for a little while, right? Remember Scott Steiner using that to pin people.
Yeah.
It's really a shame that you go ahead and touch in the corner.
But you know what I like about this? He softened him up with a pretty big power move and is now trying to drag into all four corners. It wasn't like,
I super
kick you three times, you're not going to sell it, I'm still going to try to touch the corner here, you know? But between him landing, because Vader sold the move as well as hurting to him, he just kicked Vader in the corner. That's three touches. But now things starting to come out and fight. That's what we're talking about, the value of a sell here. Selling move is, it's so lost. And I think it goes back to what you said, man. It's just, it's that indie wrestling vibe that I think everybody needs to work their way out of, you know? If you were lucky back in the day, you would have one suicide dive or something on the outside. And usually in WWE terms, it was 1-2-3 kid. And he just missed a Vader bomb in the corner again.
He almost didn't. Sting almost didn't get out of the way there.
Yeah, he hit it. His arms hit Sting, which still probably hurts. Oh, man. Harley Race with his gravelly voice. Good manager. So Vader went out realizing that he can't step on the top rope. Smart move. He realized he went through the ropes and realized he can't get to the top rope because the straps attached to him. Went back in the ring and stepped over the rope from the second to get to go to the top. Sting now pulling the strap. Oh.
Just crotched Vader.
Right in the nads.
This match, certainly, there hasn't been a lot of downtime this match. Like a lot of big powerful men now pulling Vader off the top.
But I like just like you're very right. Hard hitting, a lot of power moves, not a lot of downs. Like this is the first, probably second time we've seen them both down on the ring at the same time. Wow, look at that! That was like a closed fist right in the jaw. Looked like that shit hurt, man.
It probably was a real closed fist too. As we said, he was known as being a stiff wrestler.
Yeah, well, he learned from the best, wrestling with Stan Hansen and shit in Japan.
Well, Japan, I mean, they beat the shit out of each other for real.
If you guys ever get a chance, and I don't know if any of you have ever heard, but early Steve Austin podcast had Vader on there. He talks about his early career in, like, New Japan. He talks about his WCW days and stuff like that before he passed. Austin now doesn't do the podcast anymore because he does the Broken Skull sessions, but those are some good interviews that he ran there.
Yeah, I enjoyed listening to Austin's podcast.
Here's the thing. Now, if you're Nick Patrick, do you count that as 1-1?
No.
They're both in the corner, right? Yeah.
Superplex coming up.
Wow. Devastating. There's blood on Sting's chest. I'm not sure if that's from Vader's blood.
I think it is. Yeah. Yeah. It's coming off of Vader. Although that Vader's back looks to have stopped bleeding now. And now he's touching. See, I think it has to like be in the actual act of touching the turnbuckles for it to count. He's at three. One more. And he's staying hooking the bottom rope with his legs.
Wow. Very little, you're right, very little downtime. These guys must have been exhausted by the end of this match. Wow, clubbing blows to the chest. I love those. Those little like slaps slash like almost boxer fist in the corner. Goes to the head, to the body, to the head, to the body. And you know that, you know those things are hitting. They're, those straight potatoes.
Yeah, for sure. He actually, you know, when we do visit Vader versus Cactus Jack, Mick Foley actually asked Vader to break his nose in doing these punches, and Vader did it.
Crazy. I don't know if you noticed, but there's a little kid in the front row with a white shirt on that seems like he's legitimately crying. This thing is getting beat up right now. He's hard camera side, kind of towards the middle, maybe more off to the right-hand side.
I think I see him, yeah.
Sitting next to his mom, it looks like, who's also wearing a white T-shirt. Oof, ear clap right there.
Sting was a popular guy, for sure.
You know what I like, too? They use the straps in terms of pulling people down, pulling him to you. Oh, there's the heel kick. There it is again. Look at that guy. Come on, Sting!
And what a good way to use it, too.
Right. That was a great move. I was just going to say, they started whipping each other in the beginning, but they've used the strap more to, like, pull each other towards you, pull each other into the turnbuckle, pull them off the turnbuckle, off the top. And this one, he tried to pull Sting in and used it to hit that heel kick again, which, again, has been the story of their last three matches. He's hit it at least once. Wow, big German suplex there, too.
Yeah. Don't see that a lot from Sting, but... And there's a DDT.
You know, it was a, you know, it was a bad match when Vader took the mask off. And I'm not saying bad in sense of, like, the match sucked. I'm talking about, like, hard-hitting, bad. Sting looks like he's busted open a little bit. Look at his forehead here.
Yeah, a little bit, maybe.
Might have been hard way there, because it doesn't seem like it's leaking too bad. But those punches might have busted him open in the corner. But look at Sting laying it in now. Look at that. Sting is giving it right back to Vader in the corner. And those look like, and those look legit as well. Bravo.
Probably a little bit of a receipt there.
Did you see that thumbs up from Vader, though, just now? After the hit, he looked at Nick Patrick, gave him a thumbs up. The mask came off. See? Told you.
There it is.
Look at that. Now picking him up. Wow.
Oh, and he hit Nick Patrick.
Hit Nick Patrick. There's the ref bump, which that didn't look like he kicked him in the face, though. But this is a Dusty Rhodes finish, of course. He's going to touch all four corners. The ref's not going to see it. And Vader will do it. You know, like, this is crazy.
Yeah, that's a lot of power to be walking around him like that.
That's some just straight deadlift shit right there. Like, his legs are starting to give. And he won. Oh, wait a minute. But, did he hit or did he just see it?
I think he tripped over the ref.
Let's hit some audio here for the commentary.
And now Vader's head is busted open. Vader's now bleeding from his face.
Oh, wow. That had to be those punches as well.
Yeah, I think Sting really, he probably really was pissed off in that little sequence.
Or
there.
It was just gentleman's agreement. Yo, we're going to lay our shit in there.
Could be.
Yeah, see, Ventura says he missed the last corner.
Okay. Now he's got his leg tied up with the strap and dragging him.
Crowd is booing heavily. It's the side of his face and ear where he was punching him, so it's definitely the punches.
Yeah. It's 3-1 more for Vader. Vader trying to stretch out and touch that last turnbuckle.
That's the kick.
And he did it.
See? Knew it.
Yep. Kicked Vader into the corner and Vader touched the buckle.
What kind of fucking finish is that, though? Like, just let Vader then carry him to that corner. Ooh. Like, he was trying to pull him, but kicked him into the corner?
Yeah. What a match, though.
Yeah.
What a brutal... And look, Vader is fucked up.
Yeah, but Sting got to get his heat back, right? So he's going to whip him with his strap.
So Vader wins the White Castle of Fear strap match.
Look at Johnny B. Bad. What the fuck is he wearing?
Apparently Vince McMahon was a huge fan of the Johnny B. Bad character, and that's why he signed Mark Merrill. What a match.
Stop it here. What a match. Let's pause it there. Great match. Great match. Barry Windham at the time defeated the Great Muta to become the new NWA world champion.
Yep.
That's the big gold belt at the time. And Barry Windham, they were so high on him, but it just seems like it never worked. You know, but he was, if you ask anybody, he was one of the probably the greatest workers in the entire industry.
Well, that was one thing that when Ric Flair left WCW or WWF and he took the belt with him, one of the pitches that he made was to have him drop it to Barry Windham, and they were like, no. So Barry Windham was thought of very highly, but he just always – he's certainly a legend. I definitely consider him a legend. He's one of the greats, but also kind of boring in a sense, like character-wise. Like never really – he was always better with someone else, I think.
I think you're right on that. And that one. I think he also – and maybe I'm wrong here, but not that he didn't have it, but kind of lacked a little bit of it, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, you looked at him and you're like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? Like, great wrestler, but didn't have that as much charisma as a Flair or a Sting or even Vader. Barry was very charismatic as well, you know? That was a match, though. Hard hitting. They really laid their shit in right there. Both were bleeding from punches to the head. That was good. That was a good match. The kick in the corner, though, to end it. Ugh.
Typical kind of ending, though, for a strap match.
But you know what, though? The ref bump wasn't necessary. Because if you were going to have Sting touch all four and Nick Patrick not see it, that's a different story. But in the fact that he hit the three and then tripped over the ref to miss it, it would have been better the fact that his legs just gave out because Vader's so heavy and it's been a long-ass match. You know what I mean?
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think in that case, we could have been like, okay, maybe not do that. I am pleased. I think this was another really great one that we covered here. I think if we're going to discuss next steps, next feuds, I think we got to go to the tag team realm here. We've been talking about tag team wrestling for a while. We've been saying how it's underutilized in WWE. I think we need to touch on one of these rivalries that many people don't touch at. I think we need to maybe talk about some tag team wrestling next. I think we need to look at some old school rivalries. I mean, I'm looking at, just off the top of my head, some Hollywood Blonde stuff maybe. You know, Pillman and Austin. Pillman and Austin had a pretty low-key feud with Ricky Steamboat and Shane Douglas. That might be something we need to look at right there.
They also had a pretty, I think it was just one match, but it was a great moment for the Hollywood Blondes when they fought Ric Flair and Arn Anderson.
Yeah, and that might have been the basis to why they ended up breaking up.
Yeah.
A Flair for the old, which was pretty good, you know. I think something along the lines of that. I think maybe we need to look into some tag team wrestling for our next one. I think we got some good ones that we could probably take a look at. Some ones that flew under the radar, especially when you look at like the old school WCW tag teams as well. Now we're talking about my wheels are spinning in terms of classic or, you know, maybe under or overlooked WCW feuds that people don't really talk about anymore. All right, big tag team wrestling. I think we need to. I think that's the route maybe we need to take for the third. See what's going on with that one. I think I like that one.
Let's do it.
I gotta say, rest in peace to Vader. I think Vader for sure. I think this just cemented it for me. I think he's at my, probably my number one big man of all time. I think he's just, when you make the list, he's definitely there. I want to say he's definitely in that Mount Rushmore big men.
But I would agree.
He's just menacing, dude.
Yeah, I think a strong case can be made for him to be one of the best big men of all time. Absolutely.
WWE run aside, you still can't deny it, man. That WCW, the Japan run, I think it just takes the cake. I think he's up there.
And I think it also depends on how you want to look at the WWE run too. I mean, you know, Shawn Michaels, his personality has been chronicled many times. I know that there are those that credit Vader's downfall in the WWE to Shawn Michaels. So if that doesn't happen, then Vader goes on to be WWF champion. He, you know, potentially could headline WrestleMania as champion. You know, it might be a different story if Shawn Michaels didn't complain about Vader being stiff, which of course changed Vince McMahon's opinion of Vader.
The two Psycho Sid title runs never happen. If Vader doesn't, if the Michaels Vader SummerSlam match was not, it went as planned instead of being so bad. That might be something I think we need to visit also. Maybe looking at that match, maybe looking at what could have happened, what could have been. I think maybe we need to do a little watch along of that particular SummerSlam 96 match and kind of just review maybe what happened in the fallout. If you think about it too, I think we said this at the beginning of the show too, like they had everything planned out for the rest of the year and their In Your House following Survivor Series was called In Your House, It's Time. It was named after Vader because the wheels were set in motion to have Vader become the world champion. There's a great episode about Vader on the Something to Wrestle archives where Bruce tackles the fact that, yes, he came in injured. He was overweight. There was a lot of other issues. He was Vader also did admit that he was in his own head going to WWE. Psychologically, he wasn't there as well. You know, but also the fact that when Vader misses a spot, and Shawn Michaels gets up and starts stomping fucking Vader in the head and says something like, to that fat piece of shit to not move or to do this. Something along the lines of that. He says to the ref and then gets the win after. This is Vader, right? I just said he's my great favorite big man of all time. When he was on TV, he looked menacing. And little ass Shawn Michaels is stomping him in the head legitimately because he's pissed off because of a blown spot. That wasn't the Vader I saw in WCW. This is not the Vader we just saw on Peacock just now. You know what I mean? It's vastly different. That I think that it calls from some revisiting in that case.
And SummerSlam's right around the corner. Hell in a Cell this Sunday, and then SummerSlam a couple months.
I'm really glad you said that. Rey Mysterio just tweeted out not too long ago that he wants his Hell in a Cell match this Friday on SmackDown. So it looks like Reigns and Mysterio will have their Hell in a Cell match tomorrow night.
Now, what does that mean for the pay-per-view?
Why do you want to watch the pay-per-view? What are the Hell in a Cell matches there that night? Is it Bianca Belair and Bayley?
I don't know. Is that in the Hell in a Cell? I know Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley have one in the Cell, and I think Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair have it in the Cell.
Okay. If it was up to me, I would drop the whole Hell in a Cell pay-per-view gimmick concept immediately because the Hell in a Cell loses emphasis as a match. It would be great to cap off a feud as a Hell in a Cell at a different pay-per-view, like, holy shit, this is great, as opposed to, here's the pay-per-view named after the match, now we have to give you a match in some form. It's the same thing with TLC. You know, I think they should just drop these gimmick pay-per-views. You know, that's what it is, man. You know, I think it's just, that's what it is. I think it's just overused. But yeah, it says it here. Mysterio will face Reigns in Hell in a Cell on Friday Night SmackDown.
Well, it does give us a reason to tune into SmackDown, at least.
Yeah, but you know what? They're pulling in numbers. We don't need to do it. I mean, fuck, I was going to say AEW is going on Fridays because they're preempted because of the NBA playoffs, and they deliberately go on at 10 after SmackDown goes on there. I mean, that's purposeful.
Gives you 4 hours of wrestling in one night.
Yeah, I mean, I don't usually stick around for AEW. Probably I watch the replay. You know, I DVR after.
Yeah, me too.
But but still, there's a reason for that. So I mean, it's not, they're not killing it. It's not like they're crushing huge numbers, but they're doing around 2 million, maybe a little under. I don't know why they would do that though. That's not giving me, unless it's going to end in some type of weird shit. Why do you want to watch Hell in a Cell pay per view now? You know.
Well. It also could be just maybe too many Hell in a Cell matches in one pay-per-view. So they decided to scrap one.
Yeah, but you don't, Reigns is your top dog. Then you make McIntyre and Ellen Lashley on Raw, because Raw could use it. Because if I see one more RK-Bro versus New Day or one more Rhea Ripley versus Asuka match on Raw, I'm going to lose my shit. Because, like, what are we doing every week?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. And I texted you during that RK-Bro and New Day match. And
it's ridiculous.
And I was like, you know, every week, I understand building a rivalry, building a feud. It just doesn't seem like this the most interesting way to do it. And it's not just exclusive to them, right? Now we're seeing pretty much all of the superstars, they just keep wrestling the same people every week. And to have another Rhea Ripley Oscar match where Rhea once again wins clean, you could have put anybody else in that spot. It didn't need to be Oscar.
Could have been a squash match. Right. Bring an enhancement talent in there. Why does it need to be Asuka again? And it's not that I don't want to see Asuka. I don't want to see that match. No,
we all do. Yeah, it could have been someone else that they haven't used, that they haven't showcased, who could have had probably a decent match with Rhea Ripley, and Rhea Ripley could have gone over. You don't need to keep jobbing out Asuka, which is what Batista complained about a few weeks ago.
Or stop bringing some fucking jabroni enhancement talent that you just picked up that night. Let Rhea Ripley go over good. Show off to Charlotte. Then do your little face-off battle that they did. For me, like, if they do RK-Bro against New Day to pay-per-view, who gives a fuck now? Oh, we've been building up to this match. No, you haven't. You've seen it every week. Yeah. It was Riddle against Woods. Orton against Woods, Orton against Kofi, then the two tag matches. Why do you give a fuck about the fucking thing? Every fucking week. Bring back the enhancement talent. Where are the Viking Raiders have been? Where's Damian Priest been? He had a high-profile match at WrestleMania. He fucking gave Miz to the zombies. Miz and Morrison are back on TV. Priest hasn't been on TV in weeks.
That's true. Miz got eaten by zombies and came back the next night.
He came back sooner than the guy who won the match.
I know. Yeah. Oh, that's crazy. Where is stuff. He?
You know, we just said, you know, good for Joe coming back. You're hearing stuff that Aleister Black, there are people pushing for WWE to sign him back because they feel like there was a lot of start and stop pushes and they could really utilize a young, great talent like that, which is they should never release him in the first place. They shouldn't have. You have Randy Orton in the tag team. I love Randy Orton. Shouldn't be in the tag team. You need him to build up your singles division. You need AJ Styles to build up your singles division. I don't need them in tag teams right now because you have no other contenders. It's been Lashley and McIntyre for the last few months. And once one of them goes over, who's the next contender for Lashley and McIntyre? Who? Because they're not building up anybody else because they keep showing you the same fucking matches. The Viking Raiders came back. They had two matches in a row, 2 weeks in a row. I haven't seen them since.
And aren't they now number one contenders for the Raw tag titles?
Mm-hmm. How? Oh, because they won
that battle royal, right? They did. They were on Raw though. It was them and Drew McIntyre against Lashley and
AJ. Oh, hey, listen, Eve Marie's back, so be happy.
Yeah, I missed that whole segment of her return.
I will say this: I like what they're doing because she said she's coming back as a wrestler, but instead she came out with Piper Niven from NXT UK, and that's her. She calls her I want to say protege, and Piper Niven came out and squashed Naomi and won the match for Eva Marie. So I like what they're doing there. Again, they're still protecting her. You get an awesome woman from NXT, an awesome woman's wrestler, and Piper Niven.
Piper Niven's great. Yeah,
they need her anyway. Mm-hmm. They just released a bunch of people, so I hope that works out for her in the interim. You know, and then Naomi got squashed, but you know I'm sure they'll find a place for her. I hope that's not the case. They need to make the case. Somebody in that back needs to make the case for enhancement talent and doing more enhancement matches for these people because we can't see this. And there's so many other people. Ali's doing some good shit with Mansoor right now. I don't know if you're seeing that.
I've seen it. Parts of it, yeah.
Ricochet's in the mix with Humberto Carrillo and Sheamus. So they're doing something there. But, like, again, it's Humberto against Sheamus, Ricochet against Sheamus, Humberto against Ricochet, both of them against Sheamus. Three triple threat match. Like, why? Like, put them over somebody else. And what happened to Angel Garza shoving up Rose up Drew Gulak's ass? What happened to that? Shoving up 2 weeks in a row, and then he walked off to the sunset.
Do we need to see that, though? I don't know if we need to see any more of that.
It has to be a rose on a pole match or a shove a rose up your ass match.
Oh, God.
Dude gets a bouquet of roses right up his ass.
What is it? Vince Russo booking again?
Something. Give me something.
Bro, this would be a great match, bro.
Yeah, right.
He shoves a rose up his ass. It's what everybody wants to see, bro.
We have different bouquets of flowers in the corners. Use it as a weapon. Shove it in their ass, and then you have to pin them. 1, 2, 3. Like what? Well, like think of something. And then you read reports that Vince McMahon thinks that it's becoming stale. He realizes that it's becoming stale. Like okay, the fuck you been?
What took you so long?
You know, let's release a bunch of guys and then realize, hey, our product's becoming stale. Hey, where's the Iconics? Bring them back. Where's Aleister Black? Why aren't we doing anything with him? Like, they're released, Vince. Oh, thanks.
Get him in here.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, hey, sign him back. I mean, obviously that's what we want. So, bring the guy back.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. But everyone's again signs are pointing to him going to AEW when his 90-day no compete is done.
I mean, it'd be good to see him in AEW because it will, you know, we'll be able to see him. It's just disappointing that we don't get to see what that dark figure, dark father gimmick would have become.
It would have been Vince McMahon.
But we'll see.
It was him. It was him all along.
It was me, Austin.
Anyway. I think, you know, There are things they got to work on with Raw, dude. There's a lot of problems. And we talked about this a few weeks. If you go back in our archives, we talked about what the fuck's going on with Raw. And nothing's changed. It's still the same thing over and over again. I don't want to see that anymore. I don't want to see Nikki Cross win by countout on somebody anymore. Why don't you give Nikki Cross a clean win?
And you know what else is mind-boggling? Is they have so many writers now. That they have hired, you know, working behind the scenes, writing scripts, writing storylines. I don't know what the number is that they have. I just know that they have a lot. How do they all sit in the same room and come up with the same ideas every week? Yeah. There is nobody that's sitting in there going, hey, guys, we did this last week. Let's change it up. Like, and I know Vince is the end-all, be-all. That's what they always say. Everything stops with Vince. He makes the decision. So then why do you have all these people?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's weird.
It's similar to having a writing team on a sitcom. Like, you have these people who spitball ideas and to come up with one self-contained episode. But then it's like you hear about how many people, but then it's like, all right, what are we going to do this week? Vince comes in and tears the script up. Okay, here's a good one. What if Rhea Ripley took on Asuka in a rematch from WrestleMania? Great idea. Saw it the last 3 weeks, but it's okay. Dude, RK-Bro, New Day, in the ring as a tag team match. Set it up for a pay-per-view. Okay, we saw it the last 3 weeks. But yeah, go ahead with it. It's like, it just seems like there's a bunch of yes men there. You know, that's the problem when you look at it. But, I mean, I'm going to try to digress here because we could talk about this, all the raw problems for hours.
Yeah, and it's getting late, so.
Yeah, let's wrap it up here. Thanks to everybody who downloads. Thanks to everybody who's subscribing. As usual, get this where you get all your wrestling podcasts. Hit us up at Twitter, at WrestlingGuysPC, at FPP Show. We had anything new coming down the pike here?
So we do. We are going to be back recording probably this Sunday.
Ooh.
And we have a huge undertaking, a huge topic. An idea that I came up with after I watched a documentary called In Search of Darkness, which is a 4.5-hour documentary. It's two parts, actually, about 80s horror movies. And I said to myself, is 80s the best decade overall for movies? Is it the best decade overall for horror movies? So what we're going to do is we are going to compare year by year the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, and the 2010s. And we're going to decide, ultimately, what's the better decade? And maybe even what's the better year for horror. We left out the 70s. I know there's a lot of great horror from the 70s, but not all of us are super knowledgeable when it comes to 70s horror. So we decided we're going to go 80s, 90s, and then 2000s, 2010s. And we're going to decide which decade released the better horror movies. I'm going to go right on a limb right away and say it's the 80s, but we'll find out.
Ooh. In one episode?
No, no, no. Each episode is going to be a different year. So we're going to start with 1980 versus 90 versus 2000 versus 2010.
Oh, holy shit.
No, that would be, we'll be recording for days.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm going to go out of the limb and say it's the 80s. The 90s kind of not, it was kind of like a lull era, but then Scream kind of revitalizes it.
Right.
Then, 2000 is kind of like the era of the remake anyway.
And then
80s horror movies.
Right. And then 2010 is where like you saw a turn in different types of horror and more psychological, more like kind of outside the box things.
Right.
So,
and a lot of found footage. Wow. All right, cool. Dig it. At FPP Show on Twitter. Look for that down the pike. Follow us at Wrestling Guys PC. Go back to our other archives, Underrated Robberies, What the Fuck's Going On with Raw. Look at this one in episode 2. Let us know what other underrated robberies you want to see. Right now, it seems like we're going to tackle the tag team aspect here, I think, coming up very, very soon. And with that being said, this has been the Wrestling Guys podcast. We can't talk about wrestling, drink some virtual beers, just about all about virtual beers. We did the clean state of the deal. It ain't over. Get yourself vaccinated. Wash your damn hands. How you doing? Take it easy.